From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It is the 20th day of April, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. And Mike Barwinski, a senior trader from Louis Dreyfus Commodities, will join us to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, the United States has released a new report on global warming. The very first DTN Progressive Farmer Agricultural Confidence Index has been released. It is not very confident. And a biodiesel plant in Iowa is closing up shop because it's unable to survive without the dollar per gallon biodiesel credit. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. In the second half hour of our program today, on some of these stations and online at willag.org, we'll talk with an associate administrator at the FAS. That's the U.S. government's Foreign Agricultural Service. It is charged with developing export markets for U.S. agricultural products. And in just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will be here to join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's the way the numbers settled up in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. Futures like this from the nearby wheat pit. The contract settled at $4.67¾. Actually, the contract settled in Chicago like this with the last trade on the day at 486, up 18¼. July at 498.5 settlement price, up 19. And September wheat at 515, up 18.5. In Kansas City, July settled 512¾, up 19 cents. May corn futures 255.5, 7¾ higher. July at 365¼, up 8. September at 375, 7¾ higher. December futures 385¼, up 7¼. And March corn at $3.97¾, up 7 cents. May soybean futures $9.84, 7¼ higher. July at $9.94, up 7½, and the August at $9.89¼, up 7½ cents. September futures $9.72¼, 8 higher. November beans $9.63¼, up 7¼. May bean meal at $2.87.50, up 3.60. May oil at $39.07, up 14 for the day. April live cattle futures $98.67½, down 27½. June futures at $94.60, a dime higher. April feeders at $111.65, down 40 cents. The May at $112.55, down 50. And April lean hogs today at $86.20, down 32½ cents. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Here's the way the outside markets wrapped up on the afternoon. Crude oil futures, $86.45, up $2 a barrel. May ethanol at $1.56½, a penny and 7 cents higher. Natural gas at $3.98, up 3 6/10. Heating oil for the day, $2.18 2/10, 2½ cents higher. Gold futures on the afternoon at $1,138.60, up $3.40. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 11,127. It's just about 36 points higher. The U.S. dollar today at 81.05 is up 0.22. And the CRB index on the afternoon at 275.78 is up 2.55. Goldman Sachs at 540, up 5.6 on the afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. There you'll find all of our daily agricultural programming, including the pre-opening and opening market reports, and our midday with Sue Martin, all there each and every business day of the week at W-I-L-L-A-G.org. And don't forget to sign up for our free weekend newsletter. It's over on the right-hand side of the page. Just hit subscribe. If you don't like it, come back and hit unsubscribe.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets. On the line with us today, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
What a whipsaw couple of days it has been in Chicago. Rough day on the downside yesterday, and then we turned things around just a bit in Chicago for this day.
You know, we actually saw too much action both days is what we look at, Todd. Fundamentals yesterday pulling very, very hard at the market with the forecast of some much-needed rains coming in this weekend, and planting progress moving at a breakneck speed here for this time of year, you know, second only to 2004. And actually, we think that for the calculated little probably more right than they did, why we'd be actually beat that number, because it looks like, at least in our area and the people we talk to, that more corn is in the ground than the 19%. But, you know, today the outside markets took over, and the technicians looked at their charts and said we want to be buyers today. So, you know, we seem to go down, but then we bounce back up and we get up, and then we sort of hold things in check. But I think it's sort of a technically controlled market by the outside influences here today.
Do you think they're right?
Do I think they're right? Well, you know,
they're right for today. I know
they're right for the meantime and the longer term. Why the fundamentals do look very devastating as far as these price levels, Todd. Unless we're seeing an economic change around the world. You know, we're looking at the corn going in tremendously early, which generally means a few more acres of corn, which generally means higher trend line yields for the earlier it goes in the ground with good weather, and the forecast for some good rains here over the next starting Thursday night into Monday look to be quite just what the doctor ordered as far as getting the corn crop out there. But, you know, as we look at the charts, why we see that we got things pushing back up, and we could see, you know, move back over $10 in the July beans before that move stops there as far as the technicians are concerned. And, you know, it can all happen. The stoppage of the flights because of the volcanoes,
right,
and the ash coming around, you know, sort of put a damper on the use of jet fuel for a day or two, but it looks like we're getting back in action on that today.
Well, the good news and bad news is that volatility brings price action and opportunity, and of course, margin calls too, I suppose. You have to,
yeah,
have to counter one with the other, don't you?
Yeah, you know, the good thing about all this is, of course, it looked like we weren't going to have the chance to get back over $4 again on the Dease corn or back over $10 for the beans. And it does look like if the funds and the technicians want to run things a little bit, it's going to give us a second chance. And we always like those second chance opportunities to put us back in a little stronger position as far as our cash sales go. So, you know, like I say, maybe instead of getting upset with the funds, why we should be happy they're giving us more opportunities to get back in that profit zone.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon.
Support for agricultural programming comes from the Westchester Group, an agricultural asset management firm specializing in land auctions for farmland, timberland, and recreational land. More information on upcoming auctions is at westchester-auctions.com or at 800-607-6888.
Dave Dickey is Director of Ag Programming here at Illinois Public Media, and he's with us now with all the ag news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, the United States released a new draft report on climate change yesterday, 1 week before the expected unveiling of a compromise U.S. Senate bill that aims to curb heat-trapping greenhouse emissions. The report, a draft of the fifth U.S. Climate Action Report that will be sent to the United Nations, says, quote, "Global warming is unequivocal and primarily human-induced. Global temperatures has increased over the past 50 years. This observed increase is due primarily to human-induced emissions of heat-trapping gases." Johnson & Johnson, the world's biggest maker of healthcare products, today says its first quarter profit rose 29% to $4.53 billion, or $1.62 per share, but that's mainly due to a one-time gain from litigation. Excluding the $910 million gain, net income increased 3.1% to $3.6 billion, or $1.29 per share. Sales were up 4%. U.S. sales were down 5%. The first DTN, the Progressive Farmer Agriculture Confidence Index, shows producers have more confidence in the future than in the present. The index is based on a survey of 500 producers picked at random to reflect the demographic makeup of the 2007 USDA Ag Census. The initial index, calculated by comparing positive and negative survey answers, is 34.2. Any score below 50 indicates pessimism. The present situation index is 30, while the expectations index comes in at 36.9. Wall Lake, Iowa-based biodiesel producer Western Iowa Energy, has idled production and laid off about half of the workers at its 30-million-gallon plant. WIE board president and farmer Bill Horan says the company held out for as long as it could without the $1 biodiesel credit that expired at the end of December. A new report from the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization today says the dairy sector accounts for 4% of global man-made greenhouse gas emissions. Global milk production, processing, and transportation accounted for 2.7% of the world's man-made greenhouse gas emissions, according to the FAO. And Ukraine analysts say that Ukrainian farmers are likely to reseed 537,000 hectares of winter grains killed by poor weather. The area includes 420,000 hectares of wheat, or 6.3% of the total sown area of 6.667 million. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Here's an interesting tidbit that Snook Paddocky passed along to the crop sciences folks this morning. He says today marks the 40th anniversary of when scientists first inoculated corn plants with H. maidus isolates. Forgive me if I mispronounced that. It allowed them to know about and look for, but not to prevent, the southern corn leaf blight epidemic that ravaged much of the U.S. corn crop in the year 1970. Now, trust me when I say there are a lot of old boys that just cringed. It was the lack of biodiversity in the corn plant that allowed this disease to spread from Florida to Minnesota during the spring and summer of 70. The year earlier, Illinois had been the number one corn-producing state in the nation. In August, that state's director of ag estimated 25% of the corn crop had been decimated by the southern corn leaf blight. Let's turn our attention now to something a bit better, the 2010 corn crop. Nationally yesterday, USDA reports that 19% of the crop was planted by the week's end. That's 14 percentage points ahead of last year, 10 percentage points ahead of the five-year rolling average. On the winter wheat side, heading was evident in 6% of the nation's wheat crop, 7 percentage points behind last year, and 5 percentage points behind the five-year average. The most significant delay there existed in Arkansas, where planting setbacks following the late harvest of soybeans during the fall prevented the crop from reaching normal maturity before winter dormancy. Overall, 69% of the winter wheat crop reported in good to excellent condition. That's up 4 percentage points from the ratings last week, 26 points better than a year ago.
This is Greg Tayson, director of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending April 18, 2010. Iowa farmers took advantage of nearly ideal weather conditions and rapidly planted crops. Warm, breezy conditions in central and southern Iowa dried and firmed up fields after a few rain showers early in the week. However, large rainfall amounts and hail in northern Iowa limited field work in that area. Improving conditions in most areas allowed farmers to apply fertilizer and nitrogen along with preparing fields for planting corn and soybeans. With soil temperatures continuing to rise, oat planting continued, corn planting progressed rapidly, and several areas started planting soybeans. Corn planting was 19% complete, 14 percentage points ahead of both last year and the five-year average, and ties 2004 as the fastest pace on record. Producers in central Iowa lead the state with 31% of their corn crop in the ground, followed closely by growers in the southeast district at 30%. Hay fields look good and pasture conditions continue to improve as they green up, with 66% rated good to excellent. The improving conditions allow producers to get animals turned out on permanent pasture, and the excellent weather has been good for newborn calves. Temperatures in Iowa for the week as a whole averaged 10.3 degrees above normal, and statewide average precipitation was 37/100ths of an inch, or about one-half of the weekly normal of 79/100ths. This is Greg Tayson reporting from the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
This is Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office, reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending April 18th. Near ideal weather conditions last week allowed farmers the opportunity to catch up on fieldwork activities as well as making excellent progress on corn planting. The week ended with temperatures averaging 7.8 degrees above normal and virtually no rainfall statewide. There were 6.4 days suitable for field work. Topsoil moisture supplies continued their dry down and were reported 1% very short, 13% short, 79% adequate, and 7% surplus. This is certainly a welcome change from last year on this date when 73% of the state's topsoil moisture was rated in the surplus category. Corn planting made excellent progress last week, advancing by 33 percentage points, and is now at 34% complete. This compares to 1% planted last year and 12% for the five-year average. 1% of the crop was reported emerged, the same as the five-year average. This year, Illinois farmers intend to plant 12.6 million acres of corn, so considering they planted a third of the crop in 1 week, that equates to 4.2 million acres planted in just 7 days. Soybean planting was just getting underway at 1% complete, with the five-year average on this date being 0% planted. The condition of the soft red winter wheat crop declined somewhat from last week due to the drying conditions and was reported at 12% very poor, 19% poor, 33% fair, and 34% good, with just 2% in the excellent category. In light of favorable weather conditions in April, forage producers expect to begin haying a week or two ahead of normal this spring. This has been Brad Schwab with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the Crop Weather Report for the week ending April 18th. Field work advanced rapidly as the sunny, windy weather dried out fields, and farmers took good advantage of the ideal weather for the week. Corn planting advanced at a record pace and is about 1 day ahead of the previous record set in 2004 and 2005. A tremendous amount of tillage and chemical applications were done early in the week, though the windy conditions limited herbicide application. 6.0 days were rated as suitable for field work. 17% of the intended corn acreage has been planted, up 16 percentage points from last week and well ahead of last year's 0% planted at this time, and also ahead of the five-year average of 4%. 34% of the winter wheat acreage is jointed, compared with 23% last year and 33% for the five-year average. Winter wheat condition is rated 68% good to excellent, compared to 76% last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Nebraska Field Office with the Crop Weather Report for the week ending April 18, 2010. Precipitation along with warmer temperatures covered most of the state. Temperatures averaged 6 degrees above normal. Highs range from the mid-70s to mid-80s with lows in the upper 20s to low 30s. Precipitation fell later in the week with the South Central District receiving the most moisture while the Panhandle was mainly dry. Soil temperatures increased and ranged from the mid-50s in the west to low 60s in the east. Both topsoil and subsoil moisture supplies are above the previous year and five-year averages. Corn planting was limited to 5% statewide. Oats planted increased to 71% and are starting to emerge. Wheat conditions rated 66% good and excellent, close to last year, and are beginning to join. Alfalfa and pasture and range conditions were mostly good or excellent and well above last year. Calving is 88% complete with normal calf losses reported. This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAST, Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report for the week ending April 18, 2010. Sunny skies and above-average temperatures have helped small grain and corn planting advance ahead of average. Spring wheat planting advanced to 43% complete, compared to 4% for both last year and the five-year average. Oats were 66% planted, 47 percentage points ahead of last year and 53 points ahead of the average. Barley was 45% planted, compared to 3% last year and 4% for the average. Corn planting advanced to 13% complete, compared to none last year and 1% for the average. Sugar beet planting was 15% complete, well ahead of the average. Temperatures were about 10 degrees above average during the week. The week began with active weather that included thunderstorms and some hail reports Monday afternoon and evening in the south-central part of the state. More thunderstorms followed early Tuesday morning, bringing heavier rainfall amounts to central and western regions. In most areas, rainfall amounts did not significantly disrupt spring fieldwork, and most farmers were back in the fields by weekends. That's the weekly crop weather for the week ending April 18, 2010. I'm Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS, Minnesota Field Office.
And I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report. This is a production of Illinois Public Media. On a Tuesday afternoon, time now to check the cash grain markets and the energy markets as well. Along with us today, Mike Barwinski. He's a senior trader at Louis Dreyfus, located in Kansas City, Missouri. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the energy markets. In particular, I've made note in our news segment that, and it was a fairly small biodiesel plant, but a biodiesel plant went under in Iowa. Are they having a tough time of it?
Oh, I mean, they're having a very difficult time. I mean, for a plant to even stay afloat right now is pretty difficult. The removal of the $1 a gallon blender's credit kind of really was the death knell to most plants in the industry.
And then turn your attention to the ethanol side of that equation. I know you've got plants. Actually, you have both biodiesel. Louis Dreyfus does biodiesel and ethanol plants. Mm-hmm. Are either set of your plants in trouble?
No, actually, our biodiesel plant is able to run as a soy oil plant as well. So we have been able to not get caught as other plants as well who've only been able to run one sort of commodity. The ethanol plants, just like the rest of the ethanol industry, as I'm sure you heard, is it's suffering through a little bit of a low margin environment, but the majority of industry is still holding on. Margins are still positive and plants are still running.
How long does it take, and I don't know whether you know or not, to switch over from a food grade soy oil to back to biodiesel or the other way around?
I'm not sure. I don't think it's that long of a switch, though.
Yeah, right.
It's not like flipping a switch, but it's certainly not that long.
I know the ethanol plant, or one of them that in Peoria, is capable of switching from ethanol to a food grade alcohol in about 24 hours. I didn't know how quickly a soy.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's probably about that time or even shorter.
Okay, and finally, do you expect margins for your ethanol plants to get better as we go through the year, or worse?
Yeah, I believe so. I think we're increasing blendings in certain areas over the country. We're getting towards that that magical E10 number for national, and certainly we have the proposals ahead of with EPA about E15 coming on board maybe in the next 3 to 6 months. So there's definitely a lot of possibilities and a lot of upside to the industry here.
Thank you so much, Mike.
All right, thanks, Todd.
Mike Barwinski is with Louis Dreyfus out of Kansas City, Missouri. Back in 2 minutes with the weather forecast.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
In business news, Goldman Sachs Group today says that first quarter earnings nearly doubled, topping expectations bolstered by fixed income trading profits. Net income rose to $3.29 billion, or $5.59 per share, from $1.66 billion, or $3.39 per share a year earlier. Analysts, on average, had forecast $4.01 a share. Britain's financial regulator today started a formal enforcement investigation into Goldman Sachs 4 days after U.S. regulators filed a fraud case against Wall Street's biggest investment bank. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission has accused Goldman of hiding from investors the fact that a prominent hedge fund manager was betting against a subprime mortgage product that he had helped create. And the White House on Monday predicted that legislation to overhaul financial regulations would get strong bipartisan support. White House spokesperson Robert Gibbs also says that the Obama administration has no intention of watering down the legislation in order to court wavering Republicans. Lawmakers are considering financial legislation this week. And Coca-Cola today says first quarter profit climbed 19% as the world's largest drink maker continued to see rapid growth overseas. The company earned $1.61 billion, or 69 cents per share, in the quarter ending April 2nd. That's up from earnings of $1.35 billion, or 58 cents per share, in the same period last year. About three-fourths of Coca-Cola's revenue came from outside North America. And that's a look at today's business news.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us this afternoon is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hello to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
More clouds out there this afternoon. Will they bring us rain eventually?
Well, the short-term rain outlook, not real good. What we're going to see is more clouds than anything out of the system that's moving through right now. There'll be some showers and thunderstorms, but mainly just to the east of the Corn Belt, where we start to see a higher probability of getting wet. It's going to be as we get ourselves into probably the Friday weekend time frame. There's going to be some showers and thunderstorms first reaching the western Corn Belt late Thursday and Thursday night, then spreading into all of the Corn Belt Friday and through the weekend. Could be a fair amount of precipitation developing from Friday through the weekend across many areas of the Midwest, the most we've seen in a while.
Do you have targets for total precipitation amounts and who will get the heaviest rainfall?
Well, right now it's going to be real hard to pinpoint the heaviest amount of moisture this far out, but I would certainly say most of the northern and western belt, I would say central and northern Indiana, into Illinois, Ohio, then Iowa, probably going to be the bigger winners. And I could see 1 to 2 inches of precipitation over a three-day period with pockets of more in those areas.
Again, how widespread might this rainfall be across the Corn Belt?
I would say most of the Corn Belt over a three-day period is going to get rain. Now, the coverage of those 1 to 2 inch rains, probably in the order of 40 to 50% of the area.
Take me to China now. Unlike here in the United States, where we're off to a very quick start for the growing season, the 2010 Chinese growing season, a bit slower.
Yeah, and that is a situation that is going to bear watching as more precipitation in those areas is going to be possible.
Any other hot spots around the globe you're keeping track of?
Well, if we were to focus in on what's going on, obviously some folks are just wondering if the wind patterns are ever going to change in Europe with that volcanic ash, and it does look like that is happening here over the next couple of weeks. And that's going to bring about some weather changes that will bring what should be some good precipitation to portions of Eastern Europe and Russia.
Thank you so much for the update, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. So long to some of our radio stations. For the rest of you, and online, of course, at willag.org. Coming up during the farming world, we'll talk with Suzanne Hale of the Foreign Agricultural Service.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
This is the Farming World News and Interviews from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today we'll talk with Suzanne Hale. Hale is Associate Administrator for the Foreign Agricultural Service. Prior to appointment, she served as the United States Ambassador to the Federated States of Micronesia from 2004 to 2007. As Minister Counselor for Agricultural Affairs at the U.S. Embassy in Tokyo, she managed USDA's three offices in Japan from 2000 to 2004. And from 1997 through 2000, she served as the Minister Counselor for Agricultural Affairs at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing during China's WTO accession negotiations. Now, as Director of the Foreign Agricultural Services Ag Export Services Division from 1990 to 1996, she managed USDA's International Trade Show Program, and she worked closely with State Departments of Agriculture and coordinated outreach for new exporters. Administrator Hale, thank you so much for taking time today. Could you answer a quick question for me, which is, what's the mission of the Foreign Agricultural Service? Some of our audience won't know what it is.
Yes, we have two missions. One is to promote agricultural exports, and the second is to promote food security around the world. We represent the interests of U.S. farmers in over 154 countries through our offices around the world. And we do several things. We do a lot of market analysis. It's really important for U.S. producers to have a sense of where global markets are going when they're making their planting decisions and marketing decisions. And so we do a lot of market analysis. All of our reports are up on the internet and available for everyone and everyone to see. We also work very closely with U.S. producer groups like the Grains Council, American Soybean Association, in market development programs to promote exports of U.S. agricultural products. And we also work a lot, very closely with U.S. Trade Representative's office in eliminating trade barriers and improving market access through, we do that through trade negotiations, multilateral trade negotiations through the WTO and also bilateral agreements. And then when we face unfair trade practices, we try to eliminate them.
Are you involved with USTR then as well?
Yes, we work very closely with USTR in several different fora. For example, in Geneva, we've been negotiating a new WTO agreement. And that the goal of that is to have a more level playing field, to improve access for our producers. Then we also work with them in negotiating bilateral agreements, for example, like the North American Free Trade Agreement and the Central American Free Trade Agreement.
And are you involved in the free trade agreements that are currently up on the table but not yet approved?
Well, those are up on the Hill right now, I'm not directly involved in those, but yes, we are working with USTR to fine tune those agreements and then they'll need to be approved by Congress.
Can you tell me about some of the intelligence reports? I see those are listed, the commodity intelligence reports, and what they might tell us about the world.
Yes, I think that one of the main things that we're obviously looking at is what's happening with production. We've got people on the ground that are looking at what crop conditions are like. We have satellite imagery that we're looking at to see what's happening with crop conditions. And so we do a lot, provide a lot of the information on what's happening with international crop production in key competitor countries. That's used by USDA's World Outlook Board when they do their, every month they do an assessment on the supply and demand situation for key commodities. And so the reporting that our folks in the field do are an important part of the analysis that's the basis for those monthly projections.
Yeah, so the World Agricultural Outlook Board will take a look at some of the reports that are coming in from the folks at FAS. If people, farmers, producers, commodity brokers, others were interested in seeing the reports directly, can they do that from your website?
They certainly can, yes. If you look on the Foreign Agricultural Service website, you could just Google FAS. And they're very accessible on our website, and so you can look at the analysis we do. We have sort of summary analysis of all of the reports that we do on a regular basis. But you could also look at the oilseeds report that's come in from the most recent one that's come in from Argentina or Brazil, and actually find out what our people in the field are seeing in terms and what they're expecting in terms of planted area, in terms of expected yields, and so that it's possible not just to get the summary reports, but to go back in and get the actual reports for each country.
And then if you were to get the reports, are they statistical data then, or are they written summaries, or both?
Both. We always have tables that have supply and demand analysis, and then a text summary report. And I think that they're also, those reports are also important, I think, for producers in understanding. We also do demand analysis. And so if we are expecting there to be, you know, increase in demand, for example, the demand for soybeans in China has just grown very, very rapidly. And so those reports would track that kind of change in demand as well as changes in production.
Are you familiar with the ins and outs of the reports at the moment? For instance, what is the economic outlook for China in terms of continuing to purchase soybeans from around the globe at a very rapid pace?
Yes, we are expecting growth there to continue because as people the Chinese economy is doing very, we're seeing good growth there, and as people become more affluent, they're just able to afford more livestock products and more vegetable oil, and that's what's been fueling the growth there, and we expect that to continue.
Have you done reports at FAS on the world economy and the world population growth and projections as to how quickly one and the other will grow and what kinds of needs we'll have for food security around the globe? I think food security is probably a primary mission of the FAS.
Right. Most of our reporting focuses on agriculture rather than on more general topics like demographics, but we certainly use other people's analysis in making in the analysis that we do. And I think there's food security is certainly a very high priority. We have some really innovative programs. I think probably one of the most successful program has been the McGovern Dole program, which provides assistance to some of the poorest of the poor countries in providing school lunch programs. And that's good because it improves nutrition of children who really need it, but it also encourages children to go to school and really supports the educational programs in those countries.
How does it work?
We work with partners in those countries and private voluntary organizations. And we will work each year to figure out which programs which countries where the need is greatest, and then we will announce programs in those countries and then work with private voluntary organizations to implement the programs.
Is implementation development of school lunch program content or the meal parts of it locally, or is it purchased from USDA stocks, a combination?
Traditionally, most of it has been provided by the food assistance has been provided by the United States, but recently we have a pilot project to do some local purchases as well.
And the reason behind the local purchases would be to develop it? To develop a local economy for food products?
Yes, and it also, depending on the situation, sometimes food can be provided more quickly if there's a real emergency by using local stocks.
So food security is a matter not only then of having available source of food, but an available source in this case of locally grown food, and they're one and the same, but two different things at the same time. One where you have available food, the other where it's locally grown and available.
I think that obviously food security depends on local production and in many cases on trade, and that it's important to. If you really are looking at the entire food security situation, it's important to look at both.
All right. So tell me about the marketing programs of FAS.
Yeah, I think that this year we're expecting close to $100 billion in exports. Next year, expecting $100 billion. The economy is. Worldwide has been suffering, but despite that, we're still expecting the second highest level of exports, agricultural exports ever. And I think there's several reasons for this, but one of them is that we've been working really hard to eliminate trade barriers, and so we have better access than we might have 20 years ago. Another reason is because the world economy is growing and populations are growing, and so just global food demand has been increasing because there's more people in places like China who can afford a better diet. But I think the third reason is because of the partnership that USDA has had with producer groups through using checkoff funds and USDA funds to develop markets overseas.
We're talking with Suzanne Hale this afternoon. She's an associate administrator at the Foreign Agricultural Service. More with her here on The Farming World when we return.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Tom Testel and Morris at 815-941-2184. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
It's National Pineapple Upside Down Cake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1821, Franz Karl Achar died, a German chemist. He invented a process for the large-scale extraction of table sugar from beets. In 1801, he opened the world's first sugar beet factory in what is now modern-day Poland. In 1856, Robert Livingston Stevens died, a U.S. engineer and chip designer. He invented the widely used inverted T railway rail and the railroad spike. He found that rails laid on wooden ties with crushed stone or gravel beneath provided a roadbed superior to any known before. He also added the cow catcher to the locomotive and increased the number of drive wheels to 8 for better traction. In 1862, the first test of pasteurization was completed. The test container was opened at a meeting of the French Academy of Sciences. It contained dog's blood and urine that had been maintained at an elevated temperature, and neither liquid showed observable decay or fermentation, leading to the idea that foods could be heated to kill germs without significantly altering their chemical composition. And in 1999, the Disney film A Bug's Life was released. It was the first 100% digital DVD. It was transferred directly from the digital source to the compact disc. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This is the Farming World from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We'll continue now our conversation with Suzanne Hale from the Foreign Agricultural Service. Ms. Hale, before the break, the discussion had turned to the cooperative effort between producer groups and the United States government, in this case through the Foreign Agricultural Service, and how it had been successful. Do you have examples?
Looking back in Japan, just to give, I spent a lot of time there, and just to give one example, when I first went to Japan when I was in college in the 60s, women used to go to the grocery store and buy every day, and they would buy one or two eggs, which would be wrapped in a piece of newspaper, and they would take it home. And the Grains Council got the idea that if people had egg cartons, that they would be able to buy more eggs and buy, a dozen eggs at a time instead of one or two. And so they introduced the idea of egg cartons, and now everyone in Japan buys their eggs in egg cartons, and it's really increased demand for eggs. I think that that support from the U.S. producers through the checkoff programs has been really important.
This is a bit of an odd question, maybe, but I'm wondering if, for instance, let's take the change in the way Japanese were buying eggs, and they were buying a couple of a time, and then they bought more in a carton, and egg sales went up dramatically, of course, which led to the need for more poultry, laying hens, and the need for more feed from the United States to come into that. Do you think that was good for the Japanese diet?
Well, I think historically the Japan started from a diet that was really deficient. If you looked at, right after the war, the Japanese diet was very short in protein. And I think that the introduction of livestock products is, assured that kids have drink more milk, have more calcium in the diet than they did traditionally, more protein in the diet than they did traditionally. Traditionally, Japanese have eaten a lot of fish, and just in terms of sustainability, fish stocks around the world are getting tighter and tighter, and so that being able to supplement the Japanese diet with more chicken and beef and pork and eggs. It has been important in making sure that there's a balanced diet, and I think that if you look at Japanese kids, they're just a whole lot taller and healthier than they were 40 years ago.
Is it something that can be replicated, for instance, or is being replicated, whether it be in China or India or other parts of the world where we have developing nations?
Yes, I think that it's very much being replicated in other countries. Both the American Soybean Association and the Grains Council have active programs in what we call emerging markets, places like in Indonesia, Vietnam, that are where we're seeing the same sort of in improvements in diets as people have more money to be able to afford more livestock products. And then it's just really important to have efficient production. I think and the Grains Council and the Soybean Association have really done a good job of working with to improve breeding, working to improve rations, working to improve animal health, and have really helped livestock producers become more efficient around the world.
Maybe you could close with this thought. How is it that the U.S. government, FAS, works to implement these kinds of programs with, for instance, the American Soybean Association or the poultry producers, those agencies that have at their heart a mission of expanding the need for products that are developed by producers or farmers in the United States?
We have two major programs. One is the Foreign Market Development Program, and the other is the MAP program. And Congress gives us money, and then groups apply for those funds. And they will send in a proposal of which countries they want to work in and what level of funding they need. And one of the things that we look very closely at is how much the groups of their own funds they're willing to contribute to the project. And so one of the reasons that the checkoff funds are so important is that for groups that are planning to put a lot of their own money into a project, they kind of have a leg up when they apply for funding. And so then we provide the funding, and then those groups do all of the implementation of the activities overseas. And because our staff is limited, and so this kind of approach has enabled U.S. agriculture to just do a lot more overseas than the producer groups could do on their own, or that USDA could do on their own.
It's one of the way checkoff funds are spent by the producer groups?
That's right. It's that partnership has been very important over the years.
We appreciate you taking the time with us. We do. We really do. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed talking to you.
Associate Administrator of Foreign Agricultural Service, Suzanne Hale. You've been listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a good afternoon.